This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Jay Baker, describes himself as having been born into the premier family of a mega media church, a family that many viewers once assumed was the perfect Christian family. Jay is the son of televangelists Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. They were the creators of the 700 Club and the PTL Club, which was broadcast through their own Christian satellite network. PTL stood for Praise the Lord. Two scandals brought down this television ministry in the late 80s. Jim Baker was accused by Jessica Hahn of raping her, a charge he has denied, although he admitted to a sexual encounter. Jim Baker was also convicted of defrauding the followers of PTL. Meanwhile, Jay Baker went through a rebellious period. He dropped out of high school, drank, smoked marijuana, and used LSD. But now he has his own ministry. He's working with young people who are alienated and rebellious, including kids into hardcore music, goth, and skateboarding. His ministry is called Revolution. He's written a new memoir called Son of a Preacher Man. I asked him why he identifies with the young people he ministers to.
Growing up, I was always a skateboarder. And then when we lost PTL, my dad went to prison and I got into high school, I kind of changed my whole image. I became like this preppy kid, but I was going through so much. And the kids that really embraced me were the punks and the goth kids and, you know, those different types, the subculture of the high school. And I don't know. There was just something about it that felt like right. It felt like me. It felt like where I belonged. And so I just became part of the group.
Now, part of what you do in your ministry is you have a lot of bands perform.
Yes.
What kind? Tell us a little bit about the music.
We have all sorts of different music. We have Christian music. We have non-Christian music. We have hardcore music, which is basically screaming and very loud guitars and drums. We have melodic punk. We even have the Huntingtons, who sound just like the Ramones. Matter of fact, when they're in New York, they play with the Ramones. We have the X Impossibles, who the guitarist owns one of the local tattoo parlors. We just had Gargantua, who's another guitarist who owns a tattoo parlor in town. So we have all different types of bands, that different genres of music and different faiths, different beliefs. We even have atheist bands play.
What kind of reaction do the bands that play at the things that you stage with your ministry get from other Christian groups?
Everybody's pretty open about it. I think one of the worst things we ever happened was is we have a lot of atheist kids come when we do hardcore shows. And, I mean, there's a huge hardcore scene where you're at in Philadelphia. But we had a show and I went up to the band and said, listen, you know, I heard the band was being a Christian band. They were being real zealous. They're like, oh, there's atheists here tonight. We have to be ministers. We have to blah, blah, blah. We have to really put it in their face. And I went up to them and said, listen, you guys, you know, please don't get preachy. Please don't get crazy. Please don't get it in their face. I said, we've built, you know, years building relationships with these people. You know, these people are hurt enough and have had enough stuff shoved down their throat. Please don't do anything. And the kid looked at me and goes, well, I would be willing to die for my God, you know, and just had this really militant attitude. And I said, well, listen, I said, I've worked very hard not to have this be that kind, not to have this ministry be that kind of ministry. And he said, okay. Next thing I know, they went on, you know, they broke into a praise and worship song, Our God is an Awesome God, hardcore version, and started saying, you're in church, welcome to church. And so I have a harder time with some of the Christian bands rather than the non-Christian bands, actually.
Are some of the bands that play for the concerts that your ministry gives banned from other ministries? Do you find that other ministries are as open musically as you are?
No, most aren't. Most are Christian entertainment facilities, and we are not. That's not what we're called to do. We're called to just give people a safe environment to hang out and just let people relax and be who they are and come as they are. You know, I feel like that's what Jesus would be doing. That's where Christ would be. I think if Jesus managed a club, that's the type of club he would manage.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jay Baker. He's the son of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker and the author of the new book, Son of a Preacher Man, My Search for Grace in the Shadows. Jay Baker is a minister himself now. I wonder if you think that certain Christian groups and churches do foolish things in the way that they try to get teenagers to stop listening to hardcore or heavy metal or any other form of music that they consider to be anti-Christian or a bad influence?
Well, I think the 80s was the most ridiculous when they were backward masking, and then they'd have these, they still have these big events where they tell the kids, they're like, bring your CDs. They call them secular CDs, and we're going to break them and burn them and give them to God. And, you know, I think that's kind of out of touch. I mean, I think if a kid is listening to an album and he feels like it's not good for him and that it's bringing him down, then he shouldn't listen to the album. But if an album's not bothering him, I don't see a problem with it. I think it's kind of pathetic and manipulative how the church has reacted to non-Christian music. We've tried to scare kids. We've been like, the devil's in your music. They're going to make you kill yourself, or different things like that. And I just think that's foolish nonsense.
Do you think that devil imagery is particularly potent for kids who grew up in fundamentalist families, who grew up quite literally believing in the devil?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of these kids, if you asked them, you know, if they gave you a true, honest answer, why are you serving God? These kids that were raised that way, they'd be because I'm scared of going to hell. Because I'm afraid of burning to death. Why don't you do this or do that? Because I'm scared of the devil, or I'm scared what God might do to me. And they have this complete misconception of who Christ is and who God truly is, because they've had so much religious tradition shoved down their throats that it's really not biblical at all, or it really doesn't have anything to do with Christ at all. I mean, Christ was a friend to sinners. Christ never used perfect people. But somehow we've gotten to the point where we believe that somewhere along the lines that changed. After the Bible was written, now all of a sudden God uses perfect people. And that's impossible. There are no perfect people.
How do you deal with teenagers who are behaving self-destructively or who are being dangerous to others? And, well, for instance, like kids who are really becoming addicted to drugs or alcohol, or are being very racist or violent.
Well, I'm in a 12-step program myself, so when I'm dealing with kids who have addictions, you know, I try to help them get involved in a 12-step program. I talk to them, but I try to leave the decision up to them. I'm not at the point where I'm like, you're going to have to do this, you have to do that. I can't change their minds. When kids are becoming violent or different things like that, I remember one kid in particular who just was who was a skinhead, and he just was so angry all the time and so mad. And I just said, you know, he's going down the wrong path. I asked him, I said, hey, man, let's go eat lunch. And we had lunch together, and I said, listen, you know, I feel that you're acting like an idiot, you know, that you're talking about harming people. You seem like you're becoming racist. I'm like, what's going on? You know, and just confronting the issue and saying, listen, man, I love you, and this is why we're talking. This is why I'm saying what I'm saying. Because I don't want to see you go down this path, because I've seen so many kids before do this, and it leads to nowhere fast. And if a kid is cutting themselves or different things like that, we'll talk to them for a while, and eventually we get them into counseling. I'm glad to say we pretty much have 100% success rate in the area with kids who have been cutting themselves or mutilating themselves. We've been able to get them into some sort of counseling, and now they're no longer doing that. So we've really been successful in that area.
Now, what music and movies meant the most to you as a kid?
Interesting question. I think U2 Joshua Tree, when I was 11, meant a lot to me. It was just a really special album. It was kind of, I'd listened to rock and roll and stuff before, but for some reason that album just really pierced my heart in a special way. And I love Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and I still collect Han Solo action figures. Most people collect Star Wars stuff. I only collect Han Solo figures, or maybe a Chewbacca figure here or there. But that's the kind of stuff that was special to me when I was young.
Now, did your parents try to restrict what you watched and what you listened to?
No.
I mean, they were on TV all the time.
Yeah. But they were quite open. I can remember when everybody was saying, I don't know if you remember a rock band called Striper back in the 80s, Christian rock band, and they were pretty popular. They were on MTV and different things like that. And all the Christians were saying, these guys are satanic, and they're trying to infiltrate the church and all this stuff. And they were playing at a local bar in town. And I asked my dad, I said, Dad, I really want to go see this band Striper. And my dad said, okay, you can go see him, but you got to go with me. And so actually him and my mom and my sister, we all went to this bar, you know, sticking out like a sore thumb. They finally put us up stairs in like a private room. But it was this little bar in the middle of nowhere. The first band was like this complete, like, supposedly satanic band. And it was like crazy. But my mom and dad took me to see Stryper. And at the end of the show, my folks invited Stryper to come and stay at Heritage USA at one of the hotels. And it's kind of funny. I guess that's where I got my start. You know, my dad was very open to all types of music and all types of ministry. My dad was never closed-minded to anything.
My guest is Jay Baker. His new memoir is called Son of a Preacher Man. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Jay Baker is my guest, and his new book is called Son of a Preacher Man, and he's the son of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker and now has a ministry of his own. Now, you say in your book, I started life on Christian TV. Did you like being on TV?
No, I didn't. It wasn't my favorite thing in the world. I don't know why I didn't like it. I think one reason, I was a heavy-set young man, and I didn't like seeing myself on television, and I wanted to play. I mean, I can remember putting my jeans and my T-shirt underneath, like, my suit or whatever outfit that I had on. And as soon as the show was over, I would split. And see, the show was from, like, 11 to 12. And so I would leave school and come to the show. But whenever we had the show, I would never go back to school. I would talk my security guard into not making me go back to school, and I'd take the whole day off, which I'm sure my dad wasn't very happy about, or my mom.
So were you forced to be, like, a goody-goody in your public life?
Not by my family. I think some of the partners wanted it that way. I can remember a particular situation where I was wearing a T-shirt that one of the partners found offensive. And when they reported it to the security came to me and took me to my dad. And my dad said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, I like my shirt. And he said, okay, well, if you like your shirt, then wear your shirt. And he was real. He loved the partners to death, but he was very particular to make sure that they didn't raise us. You know, that public opinion didn't raise us, that him and mom raised us.
I thought it's funny, you know, in your book you say during part of this period when you were, you know, growing up in the limelight, you really wanted to be Don Johnson on Miami Vice, and you and your friends would fake drug deals with Ziploc bags filled with flour.
That was really funny. It was fun. I always dressed up. I always was somebody else. I always took my playtime to the extreme. I mean, if I was an army man, I was in complete camouflage and had black makeup on my face and a machine gun. Or if I was Don Johnson, I had a pink shirt on and a white jacket and a silver 45 with a shoulder holster.
Now, you grew up in your parents' theme park. You were 5 when it opened to the public. This is Heritage USA.
Yeah, and Heritage USA really wasn't a theme park.
Why don't you describe it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was more of a retreat. We had unwed mothers' homes. We had homeless centers there. We had marriage counseling, drug counseling. I mean, they had, I can't even remember how many services they had a week, but, you know, 24-hour church services. And my dad, right before the end of PTL, decided to build a water park to give the kids something to do. And when he built the water park, I think that's where everybody got the idea that it was a theme park. It really wasn't. It was a water park with a little miniature train that went around this water park. Because all PTL was really a retreat to come get ministered to and do different things. And it had a roller skating rink, but the kids really didn't have anything to do. So my dad put the roller skating rink in, a water park in, and that was something for the young people to do so the parents could come, drop their kids off, know their kids were safe, and get ministered to or do whatever they want, relax, take a walk, you know. But it by no means was it Disneyland or Disney World, even though it was the third most visited park in the country. It wasn't really a theme park. There was no, like, Noah's Wild Rapids or anything like that.
Were you a believer as a kid? I'm wondering what your concept of God was and of the devil.
I thought that the devil was hell, fire and brimstone, and God was the person who told me I better be good and who made me and created me. And that was kind of my concept of who God was. I knew God loved people very much because I knew my parents loved people very much, and I knew that my parents were wanting to be imitators of Christ and imitators of God, and they were always reaching out to people, even beyond the spotlight and the cameras. I mean, I remember spending a lot of, I mean, I remember spending Christmases with homeless families with no cameras or nothing around and bringing them presents. You know, my parents just always really truly loved people. I mean, we were the first big ministry to reach out to AIDS patients and the homosexual community. And we were open to that. And there was a lot of unconditional love at Heritage USA. And so that was kind of a new thing.
Were your parents strict with you? Were there a lot of rules you were supposed to follow?
No. As long as I wasn't, like, threatening my safety, I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I left the house and they didn't know where I was at, I usually got a spanking. One time, my friends wanted to go motorcycle riding. And so I just got up out of bed and my parents were still asleep. And I went with my friends motorcycle riding, and I remember my dad's car driving up, and he made me pick a switch, and he spanked me. There was one time I spit in somebody's face, and he spanked me. So, you know, it was basically if I disrespected people or if, you know, got myself in danger. But, you know, my parents weren't super strict. No, they were very open to me being my own person and making my own decisions.
At what point did you start rebelling?
I think I started to rebel right after we lost Heritage USA.
And that was in 1987?
That was 1987, and I was 12, 13. I started to mess around with cigarettes a little bit and drink a little bit and go out and hang out with my friends.
And 1987 was the year that your father was accused of 24 counts of mail fraud and wire fraud.
I think that was in 88, and then in 88 is when he went to prison,
mm-hmm.
I believe. Yes, 88 is when he went to prison. 87 is when we lost Heritage USA.
And you lost it because of these charges?
No. We lost Heritage USA because Jerry Falwell came and said there's a scandal going to come out about Jessica Hahn. And what I want you to do is I want you to turn PTL over to me for 6 weeks to 6 months at the most and let me run it, and then we'll restore you and return you back to Heritage USA and everything will be fine and everything will blow over. But if you don't turn it over to me, he said Jimmy Swaggart is going to try to destroy you. So my dad signed PTL over to Jerry Falwell. Well, within 24 hours, Jerry Falwell was, you know, calling my father homosexual, you know, saying he was greedy, you know. And within 24 hours, my father realized he had been had and his ministry had been stolen from him underneath his feet.
And you mentioned...
And then that's when the government came in after that.
And you mentioned the Jessica Hahn scandal.
Yes.
She was a woman who... well, she charged that your father had tried to rape her, I think, in a hotel room.
Right, but that never stood up in any court anywhere. You know, this was 7 years prior to 1987, and my mother had left my father, and my dad was being pretty stupid, actually, trying to make my mom jealous. And one of his friends said, "Oh, I know this girl named Jessica Hahn. I want to set you up with her and introduce you to her." And he did, and they had a 20-minute sexual encounter. And that was the last he saw of Jessica Hahn until she started coming around in 1986. But my dad didn't know about it really until 1987, until Jerry Falwell said something, because she was talking to assistant pastors and different people like that who were not communicating with my father what was going on.
So this is the period when you started rebelling.
I just rebelled during that time because everything was gone. I was so hurt. I was so wounded. I was really destroyed by the loss of PTL because I lost a lot of friends. And all of the church just disappeared. All the people that my family had helped and worked with in the different ministries all just kind of just took off and either acted like we didn't exist or preached against us. And it was a really horrible, hard time. Of course, Saturday Night Live every weekend was making jokes and different things like that. So for a 12, 13-year-old kid, growing up, that was a very hard thing to grasp and handle because everything I knew was gone. And then, you know, within a year, my father was on trial, and then he went to prison.
Do you think it made it harder for your parents with you doing drugs and drinking and stuff like that? Like, you're supposed to be a model kid, and, you know, what kind of Christian parents are they if their son is running wild like this?
Well, no, I don't think so, because I didn't start doing drugs until Dad got into prison. And they didn't know about the drinking until Dad got into prison.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're like, oh, we're supposed to be model Christians and our kids aren't acting up. I mean, we were a devastated family. We were torn apart. Everything we knew was gone. And we were shell-shocked. So, you know, my parents weren't worried about, you know, how they were looking at that moment. You know, we looked, you know, pretty much to the public eye, we looked like crap. You know, no one wanted to have anything to do with us. We were the scum of the scum at that time, and that's what the church considered us, and that's what the world considered us. And it was a very, very dark time.
Jay Baker has written a new memoir called Son of a Preacher Man. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Jay Baker. He's the son of former televangelist Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, the creators of the 700 Club and the PTL Club. Jay has his own ministry now, working with disillusioned young people. He's written a memoir called Son of a Preacher Man. How do you think your sense of being a Christian compares with your parents?
I don't know. I think basically me and my parents and my sister are very, very close in our beliefs because we love people completely and we love people unconditionally. And because we're humans, we've made mistakes and we realize that no one's perfect. All have sinned, all fallen short of God's glorious standard or whatever it says in the Bible. And so we just love people and let people realize that God loves you unconditionally is our message.
A lot of the fundamentalists and televangelists, such as Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, have been very aligned with the political right and
right.
With anti-feminism, anti-abortion, anti-gay politics. And I'm wondering where you put yourself politically.
I don't usually answer political questions, but I don't think religion and politics really need to mix. Personally, I don't believe that my convictions need to be put laws on people's bodies or minds or ideas. So I try not to mix the two. I'm not into things like the Christian Coalition and different things like that because, you know, they may be Christians, but they're definitely not my coalition and they don't represent me as a Christian. And I don't know. I don't think politics have a place or Christianity has a place in politics or politics a place in Christianity. But a lot of people would disagree with me on that. And a lot of people would say, you know, I hate you because of that. But that's just the facts. I think we need to keep our faith more of a one-on-one thing with Christ rather than having it involved in our government.
It sounds like you still love your parents very much. They're divorced. Your mother's remarried. I'm wondering if they're on good terms with each other.
Yeah, they are. We just did Larry King together recently, and you know, it was cool. They were fine. You know, I mean, you know, they're divorced. You know, they're both remarried, so you know, they're not like hanging out and going to have dinner together or anything like that. But they're definitely civil to one another.
What are your parents, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, doing now?
My dad runs a ministry down in Florida where he runs a restoration center for hurting pastors, and he works with inner city youth. Actually, some of the kids that I've had to deal with who suffer from drug addiction and different things like that, I've sent down there to get help. And my mom is about to do a cartoon on Nickelodeon, and I think she's about to write another book. And so that's all I know what's going on with them right now.
I know in the documentary about her, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, she went for a makeover, and they were getting rid of like this cool black leather jacket and tight pants, mm-hmm. and she hated the look and said it really wasn't her. You know, maybe it was very hip, but it wasn't her, and she went back to the big hair and the eye makeup and the whole bit. What's her look now?
Same thing. You know, I think she's gotten away from the big hair in the 1980s. She has really no hair. Barely at all. She has very, very short hair. She wears wigs and she wears her makeup. She's who she is. It was funny, the other day I was riding in a car with a kid from a punk band, and he goes, I just got one question, Jay. And I was like, well, what is it? And he goes, why does your mom wear all that makeup? And I'm sitting here looking at him at this covered in tattoos, hair greased back, you know, looks like he stepped out of a, you know, 1950s movie, you know, biker movie, thinking, you know, what do you mean? what's about, you know? That's what she likes. That's her preference. That's her style. And she's got to be her. She's more original than me with my tattoos. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people with tattoos. You know, I get persecuted because I have my tattoos, but there's a large group that doesn't persecute me. Almost everyone's persecuted my mother for her makeup, and she doesn't care. And that's what I love about my mom, is she's like, you know what? This is what I'm comfortable in. This is me, and this is who I am. Take it or leave it. And she's very inspiring. She inspires, you know, she inspires the hell out of me.
You know, you say in your book that when you were going through your goth period, I think this is in your book. It might have been in an interview that you gave. But anyways, you said when you were going through your goth period, you used to use some of your mother's makeup.
That was actually a Rolling Stone interview.
Yeah,
I never really went through a goth period or time. It was when I would go out to a goth club called, I think it was called Visage in Orlando. And, you know, I put on black eyeliner, you know, and try to act all scary.
did your mother know that you were using her makeup?
Oh, yeah. She thought it was funny. She thought it was like Halloween.
So she liked the idea. She's so into makeup that she liked the idea.
Oh, yeah. You know, she's just like, you know, kids are crazy. Teenagers are weird. This is the kind of stuff they do. So whatever.
Right. Do you still ever have impulses that scare you?
Yes, of course, all the time. You know, I mean, writing this book, there were many times I wanted to drink. My wife had to talk me out of going to a bar once. I walked out of the middle of Bible study, and all the kids thought I was sick. And the next week, I went into Bible study, and I said, hey, you know, I left Bible study last week to go have a drink, but I didn't have it. And I try to be honest as possible with my kids. They're not. Half of them are older than me, but the people at Revolution about, you know, hey, I'm struggling on, I still have ideas and thoughts and ideas that scare me. You know, I still have temptations in my life, and I try to be as transparent as possible so they never think that I'm any better than them or that they have to live up to some expectation, because it's, you know, I think religion has put too many impossible expectations on people as it is, and that just destroys peace and serenity altogether.
Well, Jay Baker, thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you, Terry.
Jay Baker has written a new memoir called Son of a Preacher Man. This is Fresh Air.